members, I call the meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee to order.
She grew up in Cleveland, so we were at a wedding.
Members, we have four bills up for consideration today. I'm going to ask Representative Lunan to start us off. Representative Lunan, I'll move House File 3001 before the committee. And before we do that, while you're preparing, I'm wondering if Representative Carlson has had a chance to take a look at the minutes from our March 21st.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. All those in favor, any to the minutes as in your packets? In favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Minutes are approved.
Right.
Representative Lunan.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for your time today. This is my first time appearing before this committee, and so I brought the morning treats because breakfast is the most important meal of the day. And the those muffins were actually made by a lady I know personally. She's worked at Cub now for almost a year.
We have our own.
So they have a personal significance to me.
Representative Lunan, I seem to be missing the muffin man here.
Next bill, please.
Where's the... maybe went out and ate them. They're en route. The this bill, House File 3001, is pertaining to transparency and communication improvements between the legislature and the commissioner of MMV. It was based on... some ideas from the commissioner himself on some past issues that happened actually before he came in. And what it does is it would compel the department to contact the legislators as soon as there's a problem with the federal fines with bond purchases or sales from the IRS. It also puts in a set timeline of how long they have to notify the legislators about the problem and where the funding of that fine would come from. We have literally ongoing talks with the commissioner and his department on this yet of what is the final product going to look like, what we're going to refine it down to, but that is the gist of it, is those three points.
Members, any questions for the author of the bill? Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Lunan kind of alluded to it with his discussion with the department. They did have some issues that I think can be resolved with further conversation, and I've talked to Representative Lunan. We're both authors on the bill. By way of background, I had some early meetings with the department, and much of what's in the bill was a policy developed by the current commissioner. And the issue actually came about prior to the current commissioner, but he was willing to work on the transparency issue, and so he put in place a policy that is not totally what's in the bill, but by and large the direction of it. And but they do have a couple, three issues that they would like to continue a dialogue with the author and or authors as the bill moves forward, as I understand it. But the department's at the front desk, Mr. Chairman, so maybe they can clarify some of what I'm saying.
Welcome to the committee. If you could introduce yourself to the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Pollard, Legislative Director at Minnesota Management and Budget. As Representative Lunan and Representative Carlson gave background on, Minnesota Management and Budget is in favor of the concept of the bill. We've already created several internal policies to address the issue that took place over the last couple of years. And if the legislature opted to put these policies into statute, we would be supportive of that. After reviewing the bill, we did have some concerns about the specific language. As Representative Lunan mentioned, we've been having great conversations over the weekend and last week about the specifics of the bill. The first concern we have is in that first section. We believe that the way the law or this bill is written, the commissioner would have broad discretion on what he believes could potentially or potentially not subject the state to a penalty. we're not quite sure that that section achieves the goal that is intended. We get the concept, and we like the concept. We shared with Representative Lunan some suggested alternative language. We based that language on existing reporting and disclosure statutes, and the thing that those statutes have in common is the real specific trigger. When something happens, then we report. The way that this language is written is it's kind of the idea that there potentially could be something going on, which leaves a lot of gray area. And we would prefer to have language where something happens, then the commissioner would report it to you, the legislature. The second section of the bill, we think, possesses somewhat of a conflict of interest. In this instance, MMB is acting as the regulator or enforcer of the IRS regulations, but this language has the regulator paying the penalty. We believe this section is unnecessarily punitive. It punishes the regulator, which we believe to be unprecedented and unfortunately could be counterproductive in limiting that transparency that we're all trying to seek. The good news is that we're supportive of the third section. We support disclosing to the Office of Legislative Auditor. We're required to report several things a year to the OLA. They understand our processes. And most importantly for us in this instance, we believe that they understand the privacy laws surrounding these types of things and what is public and what is not. Of course, we support reporting to the chairs outlined in the bill. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Members, questions for the testifier? Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chair, on the third section, Mr. Pollard, was my understanding when I had some conversations last week that there was concern about the 10 days, that your preference would be a little longer timeline, like 30 days?
Mr. Pollard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Carlson, that's correct. If possible, obviously a little more flexibility would be preferred. Sometimes 10 days can be a little tight if you land on a weekend or over a holiday or depending upon when we find out. Representative Lunan can obviously speak for himself, but he has mentioned that he'd be open to something like that. Obviously, from an agency perspective, any flexibility is appreciated.
Representative Lunan, to that, any comment?
Well, that's right. We've had conversations about that. The intent of the number is looking for something that's reasonable. What we want is timely transparency and communication with the legislature as to what's going on over there. That notification timeline has a relationship, though. That's the end of the notification capability of the window, but it has a relationship to the beginning as to what triggers when we should be notified. And we've got some conversations there, but it's we have a little difference of opinion, but we're talking.
Representative Anderson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Pollard, I have some concerns about lengthening that to 30 days because we could have a situation where we're at the end of session and we're not notified this until after we've closed the books on the end of session, and that this could have a financial impact on our budget. So from a budgeting perspective, I think it puts the legislature at a disadvantage. I think it also hinders the governor's office, too, to being able to address some of these issues with the legislature hand in hand. Plus, I think it is also a huge transparency issue, too. If we were to lengthen it to 30 days, that's 30 days where the public is unaware that this is problematic. And I think if we can have a situation where we have all hands on deck as soon as possible to address some of these issues, I think it does right by the citizens of Minnesota. So I've looked at the 10-day window quite a bit. I've had some input from nonpartisan staff and how we have traditionally given notification, and it's within the realm of reasonableness. So I get concerned if this is something that were to happen during a legislative session in particular where we have the opportunity to address it. We would be tying our hands behind our back and not being able to be getting right on the stick and getting this addressed.
Mr. Pollard.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Anderson, I think those are extremely legitimate concerns, and you're absolutely right in that there are reporting requirements that are fall within that window in the 10 days. And timing's always a little tricky. You know, if session were to end on May 23rd this year and we were to find out something on, you know, the Friday beforehand, we obviously want to tell you, the legislature, as quickly as we can so you can make appropriate decisions. Otherwise, we end up coming back in the interim or even in the fall, and that's a challenge for us, too. It's better to do things with you, the legislature, as we can, rather than have to come back and then request a law change or an appropriation the following session. So I think those concerns are extremely legitimate. As the chair that oversees our budget, we, you know, as you know, we report to you several things, disclosure, and we try and let you know as quickly as we can. Sometimes timelines get a little blurred based on when those triggers are. You know, for example, if we are in discussions with the IRS in this case, which is an extremely rare instance, keep in mind this has only happened twice in 10 years, and the one that happened 10 years ago was even different than this. But those timelines can get a little blurred. So, you know, we appreciate the flexibility. We certainly understand the 10-day idea. And so we appreciate that understanding, too.
Representative Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Pollard, I would rather go towards a much tighter timeline, given the fact that it took, you know, well over a year this time. It was September of 2014 that this actually happened, and we didn't find out about it until December of 2015. And in that, it wasn't even informed to the legislature. It was just tucked in as a part of a spreadsheet. So I think just for the to kind of address the concerns that citizens have with transparency overall, I think this is a good start. And if we need to adjust it later on, then we can go from there. But I think at least at a minimum to give the public some assurance that we are not trying to hide things, I think this would be the best route to go.
Members, any more questions, comments for either the author or the testifier? Hearing none, Representative Lunan, you get the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. There is a very specific objective to this bill. I think we have consensus with the department and myself as to what those objectives are, and so we're going to keep working on language to get it to accomplish those objectives. And it's two-point objectives: is transparency and communication, so that everyone knows what everyone's doing. We're going to drag everything out into the light of day, and who knows, may incorporate additional or better points of view or ideas. But that's what we're going for on this bill. So I appreciate your support.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, do you have a motion before the?
I do, Representative Carlson. I will renew my motion and refer this bill, House File 3001, to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion is passed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lunan. Members, next is House File 3175. Representative Anderson, welcome to the committee.
Now we're talking. More cookies.
Representative Anderson, you understand that you're in competition with the CA for this committee, CLA for this, so they stiff competition. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I thought when people had a birthday, they tended to reward the committees that they sat on, and heard that there was somebody in this room that had a birthday, and apparently they're just ignoring everything.
So. Representative Mahoney, who might you be referring to?
Somebody with a lot of silver hair.
Well, Representative Carlson, happy birthday!
We'll just let they it qualify with silver hair, but
Mr. Chair.
Later this month.
Members, I did celebrate an anniversary of my own or my parents doing over the weekend, so thank you for that comment. Representative Anderson, welcome to the committee. I will move House File 3175 before the committee. That being said, why don't you give us a little understanding of what you attempt to do here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a Department of Public Safety agency request. I'll say a few things, then I have some testifiers that can answer more questions. It streamlines the process for driver and vehicle services to receive background check results directly from the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension for those applying to be instructors at driving schools. Under current procedure, applicants to be a driving instructor must consent and clear a background check, but DVS has to get the results back from the instructor. This will allow DVS to get results directly from BCA so they can quickly process applications and ensure that we continue to have a safe environment during the driver instructor period. Ms. Engler's here from the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. If there's any other questions or if you have any questions for me.
Members, questions for the author of the bill? Seeing none, your testifier, if they're in the audience, if they could proceed to give their testimony.
Right, I know it.
You could introduce yourself for the committee and make your remarks on behalf of the House file.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Katie Engler. I'm with the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. I believe the reason that the bill is before you is because there are fees both at the Federal Bureau of Investigation and at the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension to conduct criminal history checks like the one that's proposed here. And in essence, what happens is that the fees are collected, either go directly to the FBI or are kept by the Bureau in order to support the staff that do the work and also the criminal history system that is used to produce the records. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Members, any questions for the testifier?
No.
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, how big is the fiscal loan?
It is in your packet, Representative Cornish.
I just got here. Haven't had time to look.
Welcome.
The reason I'm asking this is really should have gone through my committee. It's an expense to my committee, so I just wonder how big it was. Somehow it got missed. I think it was the...
I think we'll have Mr. Marks explain the fiscal note. Yeah. Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, members, the fiscal note, it's in the packet. If the front page shows a $2,000 per year actual savings or revenue to the state, what might be a little better to look at is on page 2, and this would be the Department of Public Safety, and it's actually the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and Driver and Vehicle Services sections. But there's approximately $4,000 of revenue each year estimated to come in under this. About $2,000 would be transferred directly to the FBI, and the other $2,000 would stay in the Department of Public Safety in the Driver and Vehicle Services account. So that's the dollar amount involved is about $4,000 a year. The discussion here that the FBI amount is $19.75 per records check, and then the BCA keeps $15 per record check. So it's those are the dollar amounts involved for the fee.
Representative Cornish.
Is it their plan then? You said there's revenue involved too besides expense?
Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cornish, the fee charged to the applicants, yes, it's $34.75. The sum of the $19.75 that's sent to the FBI and the $15 that Public Safety keeps.
Representative Cornish.
I guess I can live with that without calling it to my committee then. So. Thank you.
Representative Liebling, good morning.
Good morning, Representative Albright. Happy birthday, belatedly.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, as I'm kind of listening to this discussion here, am I correct then in understanding that the reason for this bill is because the BCA needs to collect this extra $2,000 a year, and that's just been bypassing the BCA because some people aren't going through all the right hoops that they should be going through? Am I, Representative Anderson, is that, or is there something here that I missed?
Representative Anderson? Ms. Engler.
Mr. Chair, Representative, in order for federal criminal history records to be obtained for this type of purpose, it is required that there be a state statute that authorizes the background check, the collection of fingerprints from the applicant for forwarding to the Bureau in Clarksburg, West Virginia, where the background check is processed. It also requires that you set the reason for the background check, and then once the statute is enacted, it needs to be submitted to the U.S. Attorney General for approval prior to Driver and Vehicle Services being able to submit these requests for background checks. So the reason for the statute is in order to satisfy the federal requirements to access the federal repository.
Follow up, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the little bit I know about this, I know from some discussions in Health and Human Services that we had some time ago that had to do with the fact that the FBI handles fingerprints a little bit differently than the BCA handles them. And so am I correct in thinking that when we send these checks, these fingerprints to the FBI, they, you know, assuming that the person's clear that there's nothing, they have no criminal record, but that the FBI, once they get that person's fingerprints, they become part of the FBI database basically forever. Whereas if they go to the BCA only and do just a state-only check, I understand the BCA can't check the whole country. They just can check what's in the in-state offenses. But those don't; those are under different rules and then don't become part automatically part of the national FBI fingerprint database. Am I correct in that?
Ms. Engler.
Mr. Chair, Representative, unfortunately that's not accurate. At the current time, neither the FBI or the Bureau keeps fingerprints collected for this type of civil purpose. I believe the testimony that you heard was about something that you would have to enact in the future that would allow the Federal Bureau of Investigation to keep fingerprints submitted from people in Minnesota. But that is not what's currently before you. It's just this type of check for people who are going to instruct students to know how to drive a car.
Okay, Mr.
Representative
Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Well, that sort of allays a concern that I had because I know that when we talked about it in that other context, you know, it became pretty controversial. So thank you for that response.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Engler. I know we had discussion about this in committee, and it's not really related to the bill, but I do have some swampland. Have you or has the department ever done a check on the FBI to see if indeed they did not have those particular fingerprints on file electronically or otherwise?
Ms. Engler?
Mr. Chair, Representative, are you asking have we ever gone to the FBI and asked about the fingerprints?
To check up on your government, yes, Ms. Engler.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, we have not.
Follow up.
That swamp plan is still not drained, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Members, any further questions for the Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to point out to Representative Drazkowski that the DNR will buy your swamp land.
With legacy fund?
No, generally. Further comments? Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, maybe a question of Representative Anderson. Do we now then have a dual track system? I was here in 68 when we made the change that there is to be a license. But at one time, you took a course in teaching driver's education at a college or university, and then that appeared on your teaching certificate. Now, that's a different question than the license. So is that still done at their colleges and universities? In other words, Representative Anderson, is there a dual track these days? The background check is a different issue than being certified to teach, of course.
Representative Anderson, do you want to phone a friend on this one?
Yes, and he's right here.
Welcome to committee. If you could just introduce yourself and make comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Don Hakes. I'm the driver education coordinator for DVS.
Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Did you want to respond to the Representative Carlson's question?
Mr. Chairman, did you hear the question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I was just wondering if we have still have a dual track then where you have to get licensed, if you will, or an amendment to your teaching certificate if you're certified to teach driver's education, which is a little different question than the background check. But in other words, is it a dual track? Does it still appear in a teacher's?
Mr. Eggs?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, yes, that is correct. just for the record, there are two separate entities for driver education instructors. There are those who teach in the public school system, the high schools, community ed, and also the privately owned commercial driver training schools, which this bill is referred to. But The teachers, the instructors who teach in the high school and community ed programs are all licensed by the Department of Education and all have a driver education certification on their teaching license that is obtained through St. Cloud State University.
Representative Carlson, follow-up?
Yeah. Only St. Cloud State University?
Mr. Eggs.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, yes, that is the only program in the state that has the driver ed teacher prep program.
Mr. Chairman, I happen to be on my lifetime teacher certificate, a driver's ed instructor, but I got my licensure in Mankato prior to 1968, but so I didn't realize that St. Cloud is now the only one. But I never did teach it, by the way. I got certified to do it, and I got involved, Mr. Chairman, with coaching, which meant that I never did teach driver's ed, but I was certified to do it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Anderson, we'll, seeing no more question or comment, we'll give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Just thank you for the opportunity, and I appreciate your support.
Members, with that, I will renew my motion to refer House File 3175 to the General Register. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Yeah. Motion prevails. You're on your way to the General Register.
Is he making fun of me again?
Yes.
Members, next we'll take up House File 1495. Representative Green. While you're getting situated, I will move House File 1495 before us.
Thank you.
And my motion will be to move it to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Green.
1495 is a pretty simple bill. We deal with it quite often because it's not something that's in our base, but what it does, it provides for the training and equipment and salary for State Trooper Academy to be held in 2017, I believe. But it's pretty simple. One of the functions of government is to provide for the safety of its citizens, and I believe that that's what this bill will continue to do. So I'll just stand for questions.
Members? Representative, I'm going to defer to Mr. Marks on the definition on your line 1.5, Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, I guess the question was, Representative Green referred to it as a appropriation in fiscal year 2017. There's no language saying this is one time. The way the bill's written, that would be built into the budget base for fiscal 18 and beyond as well.
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, we get into a lot of discussions on spending and what's good spending or not. When I first put this bill forward, and the governor's recommendations were that it would be in the base, and I was under the impression when it came back from being modified that was out. But if it is in the base, then that's okay with me, because otherwise we'll be back here every year doing the same thing. And the academy is an important part of safety in Minnesota.
Representative Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, a related question, being that this is going to be in the base, either of Representative Green or maybe staff, how much do we take from the Trunk Highway Fund to fund the Highway Patrol?
Representative Green?
What is the total for the biennium? If you know that, Representative Green, otherwise maybe staff can tell us.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, I do not have that figure handy, so.
I believe Mr. Lee is going to make comment. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a moment.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, currently the State Patrol receives about $164 million a biennium from the Trunk Highway Fund, and this would increase that by $4.5 million a year.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the number that had come to mind earlier when I was looking at this bill was 80-some million, so that would have been the annual appropriation from the state, from the Trunk Highway Fund. I just thought it was good for the committee to know where some of the Trunk Highway funds are going, because there is a continuing debate, you know, roads, bridges, or other things that are funded from the Trunk Highway Fund, and I think it's just important for members to realize that it is the State Highway Patrol that I think is, I don't know if they get other funds or not, but I think that's the lion's share, at least, of the funding for the State Highway Patrol comes out of the Trunk Highway Fund, just so members are aware.
Mr. Lee, do you want to just make a comment in terms of where the funding does come for?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, the vast majority comes from the Trunk Highway Fund. A small amount comes from a Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, which is also the constitutionally dedicated road fund, and a small piece comes from the State General Fund for Capital Security.
Thank you. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kind of question along the same lines. I'm not as familiar with transportation funding. So the Trunk Highway Fund is funded from what source?
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, there's three primary state sources that the Trunk Highway Fund receives money from, the gas tax, the motor vehicle registration tax, or TAP fees, and a portion of the motor vehicle sales tax. That is kind of the main state sources, and first those go through the constitutionally dedicated Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, and of that, 95% goes to either the trunk highway system, which is all state-owned roads, but also the state patrol, county state aid system, and in municipal state aid street system. So of that Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, about 65% goes to the trunk highway system. And then there's also federal funds that are used for road construction projects that come into the trunk highway system.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all pretty confusing without a visual. But but let me just ask, the piece I'm interested in at this moment then. Am I correct in understanding from that the money that's in the trunk highway fund is mainly from the gas tax?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and members, I would actually say it's not necessarily all gas tax. I think the percentage has been declining. It's about, of state sources, so not including federal funds, it's only about 45% gas tax, 34% TAP fees, and 21% motor vehicle sales tax.
Okay. Thank you.
Follow-up, Representative Liebling?
That's good.
Representative Cornish.
I support this bill, naturally, with some bias, because my son's a state trooper, but I think the reason they're asking for this out of the regular appropriation is so we don't have to come back, wait too long, and the state patrol goes through, naturally, an attrition of people retiring in more some years than others, and so whenever it gets down too low, they have to run back and ask for a special appropriation. It would be nicer to have an ongoing appropriation. And coming out of the trunk fund is no surprise. It's been like this forever, or not forever, but a long time. And I don't think that it would be a good thing to move them out of the trunk fund and in the general fund, because then you're really subject to the ups and downs and deficits and surpluses. That's the reason that the state patrol likes to stay in the trunk fund, is a more stable resource for them, just like the conservation office. They have their statewide cops are funded not out of the general fund but out of the game and fish fund, because it's related to game and fish, and so this is related to highways. So naturally I would support it with my bias.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the reason I raise that question is not to propose a change, because of course the general fund would be taking a big hit. But there are those that are sometimes critical of the fact that not all the dollars that go into the Trunk Highway Fund are used for roads and bridges. And I just wanted to make sure people understood that that's when you hear those criticisms, that that's the way we fund the State Highway Patrol. And one could lay out a pretty good argument that that's related to our highway system, and that's probably why the history of it is the way it is. But we probably all around the here table here at times hear that criticism that those dollars are being used for things other than roads and bridges. And I think if my recollection is accurate, that this would be the largest number that comes out of the trunk highway fund for something other than just roads and bridges. There, I think, are a few other miscellaneous ones, but they're much, much smaller amounts, if I recall. But thank you.
Members, any further comments, questions? Representative Green, you get the last word.
Well, I think the bill speaks for itself. I hope you will support it. Thank you.
With that, members, I will renew my motion to refer House File 1495 to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Yeah. Last up this morning, members, is House File 2993. Welcome to the committee, Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move House File 2993. Move it to the General Register.
Members, Representative Hackbarth has motioned that he will refer to the House File 2993 and move it to the General Register. Representative Hackbarth, I see in the packet a number of pieces of information as well as a few amendments. Are you wanting to move any of those to get the file in the shape you wish it?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move the A13 amendment. That's my amendment.
Members, it's the third one down in the stack. A13. To your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The A13 amendment takes care of an issue that was brought to us by the Office of the Legislative Auditor, and there's this sheet in your packet, members, from the Office of the Legislative Auditor that on the back it talks about a fix that they thought that they're recommending to make about how the University of Minnesota receives their money and when they receive it. And we're trying to make that fix with this amendment. I think everybody's on board.
Questions to the amendment members? Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I too am on LCCMR, and this is a good amendment.
Any other?
We got a vote.
Are there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify regarding this amendment? Any? All right. Members, all those in favor of adopting House File, or amendment, the A13 to House File 2993. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, I leave it up to you whether you want to take the rest of the amendments or if you want us to proceed with the explanation of the bill.
Representative Hackbarth, if you would proceed with the explanation of the bill, then I think we'll take up the amendments after you go through the...
Very good. I have with me the director of the LCCMR, Ms. Susan Thornton, and she'll run through a very brief summary of what we've got in the bill.
Welcome to the committee. If you could introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Susan Thornton. I'm the director of the LCCMR, Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. And just a reminder, the commission is made up of 5 members from the House, 5 members from the Senate, and 7 non-legislative appointed members. What's before you today is the annual recommendation from the commission as amended by the House Environment and Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. And the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund is it's been constitutionally dedicated 3 times endowment in the state treasury. And the what's available for expenditure each year of the biennium is based on the up to 5.5% of the market value of the corpus June 30th of the even year before the biennium begins. So, Mr. Chair, last year and this year, that dollar amount is approximately $46.3 million.
Members, any questions for the testifier or the author?
Ms. Thornton. Chair, do you wish me to keep, we can give you a brief summary of what's in the bill?
Please proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. What's before you, and you've got in your packet a spreadsheet and then a summary sheet that I will be working off of. We also have work plans for each of these appropriations. In Subdivision 3, Foundational Natural Resource Data and Information, there are 19 appropriations totaling approximately $11.1 million. These include analysis mapping, foundational data related to pollinators, prairies, forest ecosystems, lakes, rivers, and springs. And it also includes the conclusion of updating the National Wetland Inventory. There's cost-efficient forest inventory methodology and assessment and evaluation of risks for grassland wildlife, pollinators, butterflies, game, and non-game birds. Mr. Chair, members, there's approximately $3.7 million of appropriations in this package directly related to pollinators, habitats, and surveys. Mr. Chair, Subdivision 4 is water resources for approximately $8.3 million. There are 25 appropriations in this subdivision, including research on harmful algal blooms, reestablishment of native mussel species, new technologies for removing a variety of pollutants such as metals, salts, sulfates, pesticides, pharmaceuticals, and excess nutrients, additional new technologies to help our understanding of how ground and surface water interact, water quantities, supply, storage, and drinking water protection. It's also appropriations aimed at reducing soil erosion, improving peak water flow management, and decreasing bacteria. Mr. Chair and members, Subdivision 5 is environmental education. There are 10 appropriations here for approximately $2.8 million. And the goal on these is experiential learning for students and mentoring of those students, including the and communities, including the Master Water Steward Program, and emphasis on outdoor recreation, conservation, and natural resource issues. Subdivision 6 is aquatic and terrestrial invasive species, 7 appropriations for approximately $5.8 million. This includes allocations for research to the newly established invasive terrestrial plants and pest center at the University of Minnesota, evaluation of ballast water treatment systems, biocontrol agents for white-nosed bat syndrome, and implementing carp control techniques at the sub-watershed level. Subdivision 7 is titled Air Quality, Climate Change, and Renewable Energy. 5 appropriations in here for approximately $2.3 million. Integration of solar energy and wastewater recycling and ag facilities, hydrogen fuel generation from wind power. Subdivision 8, there are 11 appropriations for methods to protect, restore, and enhance land, water, and habitat for approximately $8.9 million. Again, enhancing habitat for pollinators and game birds and improved restoration practices and restoration of uplands, wetlands, and shorelands. Subdivision 9 is land acquisition, and that's both fee title and conservation easements. There are 6 appropriations for approximately $6.6 million. There's restoration for scientific and natural areas, conservation easements in the Avon Hills area in Stearns County, and then 200 acres for wellhead protection within Lincoln Pipestone rural water system. And then some expansion of some outdoor recreation opportunities, including the Mesabi Trail and a recreational trail in Fergus Falls. Subdivision 10, Mr. Chair, is the emerging issues account. There's one appropriation there for $164,000. Subdivision 11 includes two appropriations, one to the LCCMR for project record system upgrade, and then another for contract reimbursement for DNR to act as the fiscal agent for non-state agency appropriations. And then, Mr. Chair and members, there are there is rider language related to data practices, pretty standard in restoration requirements. And then we have what we call carry forward, and these are appropriations that have been made in years past that because of field season needs or something related to that need some extra time in order to complete the work under the appropriation. And then, Mr. Chair, there's also a number of statutory changes that I believe in Ms. Taylor's summary for you, she outlines those. So, Mr. Chair and members, that's a very brief overview. I'm happy to provide any more detail as you wish.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would speak in favor of this bill. I do have a few concerns. I'll talk to the author with in Subdivision 7 regarding climate change. I'm not into fiction. But with that being said, I hope you'll look at page 3, lines 3.14 to 3.27. I'm supporting that wholeheartedly, and I only wish we could do more, Mr. Chairman.
I didn't hear a question in there, so we'll move on. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't sure I could ask the author. The 814, did you want to move that, or did you want me to move that amendment, Representative Hackbar?
Representative Hackbar.
I have that as your amendment, Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A14, and I could just explain it or if whenever that's in order.
All right. Representative McNamara moves the A14 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This will give Representative Davids another chance to reiterate that he likes pollinators. That's the provision that the House Environment Committee added on the bill to for the $2.2 million. The amendment clarifies that the work can also be used on a couple of trunk highways where MnDOT would like to do some pollinator work, and then it exempts from the work plans. That's the extent of my amendment, Mr. Chair.
Members, I have Representative Anderson next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering if you can explain. I'm looking on page 42.
Representative Anderson, I can just interrupt you for a second. If it's to the amendment, I have two other people that want to speak, I believe, to the amendment, and then maybe back up to you to speak to the bill. So, Representative Rudolph?
I'm not to the amendment.
Okay. Representative Wagenius, are you to the amendment?
I am to the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that hasn't been mentioned yet is that some of the recommendations that you're seeing in here were not the ones made by the citizens and the legislators on LCCMR. There were changes made in the Environment Committee up to, I think, about $8 million worth of changes, if I'm correct. This particular provision in 14 was added in in the Environment Committee, as I understand. It was not requested by MnDOT, but it was added, and we all know that there are pollinator problems, but folks just need to know that. But the part I am drawing your attention to is the last sentence in this amendment. So not only was this not requested by MnDOT, now this amendment takes away accountability. So the accountability that LCCMR has is that there are work plans that are made, and each agency makes a work plan and submits it to, so we make sure that the money is spent the way it's supposed to be. So this is taking away the work plan. And I think that's not good policy to take away oversight.
Either Representative McNamara or Representative Hackbarth would want to speak to this amendment.
I'm in favor of the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm sitting here comparing the amendment to the bill, and it looks like this appropriation, if, please, I hope I'll be corrected by Representative McNamara if I'm wrong here, but it looks like the same thing is in the bill, maybe with the exception of the word marked in a couple of places, marked Interstate 35, et cetera. I don't know what difference that makes if that word is in there, but the thing that's different is what's included on lines 1.12 through the end of the amendment, so starting with this. This appropriation is not subject to Minnesota statutes, et cetera. That's what's being added here, as I'm understanding it. I wonder if Representative McNamara could explain what those sections pertain to that this is not subject to if this amendment was to go on the bill.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, first, I'll address your first question first. The amendment on line 1.6 matches up with the original bill on page 31, line 7. They deleted the whole part for the amendment to simplify it. But basically on 31.7, the words "the state interstate as follows" were deleted. And what was added was "trunk highways, comma, including colon, marked." That was to allow MnDOT to do some work on a couple of strategic state highways that are not part of the interstate system. The intent of the bill is to work with President Obama's plan to make the I-35 corridor from Texas to Minnesota a pollinator highway, and that's what the funding is for. This is a new initiative promoted by President Obama recently, and that's why it's in the bill. Your second part is the work plan. As Representative Wagenius said, that was deleted on the lines 1.12 to 1.15.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative McNamara. And I heard you say that before, but since I'm not in the weeds, so to speak, that's really appropriate phrase for this bill, I guess. But in the milkweeds. I don't know what that means. So could you just give me, if you would, a little explanation of that?
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. MnDOT. And I can't remember, I think they're allowed to cooperate with Department of Ag and Department of DNR, would not be subjected to the work plan rules that would normally be in LCCMR.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, I mean, I don't know what the work plan rules would be, Representative McNamara. Maybe this is something that's too big a thing for a quick explanation. Maybe staff can help with that. Maybe Ms. Thornton can help. What are the work plan rules that this would exempt this from?
Ms. Thornton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, members, in statute currently has been, there's a requirement for what we call a work plan, which is essentially a scope of work. That's what I have in this book right here for the original 89 that the commission recommended. And what we do is we work with a project manager and their affiliated organization, and they develop a scope of work with a budget and proposed outcomes. And then twice a year during the for the commission approval, and the commission has always approved the work plans before them as appropriated by the legislature. And so twice a year there's a request to provide updates, reports, which are usually a paragraph of progress and problems, and then report on expenditures. And then a final report with accomplishments and outcomes is required at the end of the appropriation. It's pretty easy and straightforward, and then we post those on the web and so forth for review by the public.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I'm not clear then why we would want to exempt this from this what sounds like a pretty minor process, just to have some accountability in how this money is spent. And I don't know if I won't ask the question directly. I don't know if Representative McNamara wants to explain that a little more, why we would. I'm not really seeing it from the explanation I just got. Thank you.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of Representative Liebling and members, MnDOT certainly has the capability to make sure they, with their bid process and all their normal people and expertise, they have the ability to be accountable for how this money is spent. So the work plan would be duplicative and add to the cost of the project, and doesn't make sense on this specific initiative.
Moving along, Representative Anderson. Representative Mahoney?
My question was asked. Maybe not answered as well as I want, but yes.
Any other questions to the amendment? Representative Carlson first, then Representative
Mr. Chairman, going back to the work plan and Representative McNamara, as you may recall, I spent a number of years on LCCMR, and I know you have. I'm pretty hard-pressed to think of when we've exempted a project from a work plan. Can you give other instances? Because you have other large entities that have received grants, and they've always, to my knowledge or recollection, been required to have a work plan. For example, the U of M, I think all their projects have had work plans. So I'm a little bit troubled by MDOT not having to have a work plan. When there's that long history, and it seems to me from my time on LCCMR, where it was very successful to have LCCMR staff and ultimately the members of LCCMR review those work plans for approval. So maybe if Representative McNamara could expand on his earlier answer as to the why, because it is a rather unique amendment without requiring a work plan with the history of the LCCMR.
To the question, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, sometimes in the past, some agency initiatives have been exempted from the work plan when we think it would be duplicate to do that. I can think of sometimes when we've done that for some DNR projects. Ms. Thornton might be able to better answer specifics about.
Yeah, because I'm trying to legitimately recall, Mr. Chairman, when that may have been done, because I don't recall it happening, at least very frequently, but I don't really recall it at all.
Ms. Thornton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, my recollection is that there were three DNR appropriations in 2011 that were exempted from the work plan reporting.
Okay, and Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think I was on LCCMR in 2011, so that's maybe why I don't recall. But it sounds like that would have been the only time.
Ms. Thornton,
in your memory?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, to my recollection, yes.
And was that
Representative Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, and maybe of Representative McNamara or Ms. Thornton, either one, then when that happened, was that done by the legislature, or was that exemption given by the LCCMR commissioners?
Ms. Thornton.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, that was done in the legislative process.
Okay.
Representative Duskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, I don't know if maybe the author of the amendment or the author of the bill can comment, but I'm troubled by a lot of things in this bill, but certainly this is one of them. We are going to be establishing habitat. I assume we're going to plant plants. I hope we're not planting trees, but I'm guessing we're planting some plants, some of them weeds, some of them grasses, some of them forbs, some of them who knows what. And we're choosing to do this along our roadways where we want to keep the visibility clear, keep people safe. We seem to be butting up against competitive objectives here. And so And we own 8.5 million acres of land throughout the state of Minnesota, or at least there's public land that's in the area of 8.5 million acres. So I'm confused about why we're having MnDOT plant things along the roadway, and I'm also wondering how close to the road we're going to attempt to grow things that will impede people's visibility along the roads.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Drazkowski, for the question. This would be to show that we can not only have, which we have to have permanent vegetative cover on the right-of-way of the highways and interstates, but it can be dual purpose, that it could be good habitat for butterflies, pollinators, and other wildlife, and that it doesn't need to be as intensely managed by MnDOT. It actually, I believe, will save MnDOT some money. It'll allow less mowing, more native habitat that'll be better, and it'll be actually kind of pretty too, Representative Drazkowski, so it'll save money and be pretty, which conservatives like you and I should like. People that like butterflies will like it because it's pollinator habitat. And Mr. Chair, as long as I'm speaking, the reason it's exempted from the work plan is MnDOT certainly has the expertise and knowledge, and their inspectors can handle the inspection on the highway of a restoration project, and it would be unnecessarily duplicative to have them fill out a work plan with LCCMR.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative McNamara. Well, members, $2.2 million for pretty is what I heard, and I don't know. This whole LCCMR area seems to be one of the other areas that, along with the legacy area, that if Minnesotans actually knew, well, Representative Erdahl's paying attention now. If Minnesotans actually knew what was going on here, so we are taking $2.2 million of the people's money to establish a more pretty roadside that ostensibly will also attract bees. Now, I don't know if you're at an intersection and the windows are rolled down. Do you want clean air flying through, or do you want bees flying through? I don't know. Couldn't we do this in the forest? Anyway, I guess I'm kind of through here, Mr. Chair. But I'm just venting some frustration with how the level of insanity that has developed in how we are spending the people's money, not only here but Legacy and other places as well. We need a second guess or have a second thought about what we're doing here, because insanity is not what the people of Minnesota sent us here to do. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kahn.
Well, this gave me several insights to what to say on this. First of all, I guess Representative Drazkowski's speech was to make it subject to the work plan so that we have more visibility and the people get to see more. We have to remember where the funding comes from LCCMR. The funding comes from lottery money, and I've always said the lottery is the perfect example of a tax on stupidity, because it's when you look at the chance of winning it. So this is a very good way to actually do it for something that has some intellectual attitude behind it. It's also interesting with the specific mention of Highway 35. Highway 35 is referred to nationally as the Monarch Highway because it is such a path for monarch migration. And I've been told, now I have only been told this, I have not checked it out myself, and people who regularly do it should check it out the next time, that you drive down Highway 35, and at some point it goes from Minnesota to Iowa. You're driving in Minnesota, and it's nicely mowed and totally mowed. You get to Iowa, and it's full of pollinators and not mowed. So I think, I don't usually think we need to use Iowa as an example, but I think we ought to find out what they know that we don't know. And and specifically in terms of not of saving money on the kind of maintenance that we do to keep this nicely mowed Minnesota part of the highway. And I go back a little further than Representative Carlson. My tenure was back many years when it was just LCMR, and in fact I chaired it for two sessions at that time, and I don't remember us ever not having a work plan. And the work plan is particularly good, and it's particularly good here. We've already said that the Department of Transportation doesn't have the expertise because they haven't been doing this. I think the work plan is really important in this issue. And we've always, and it gives the increased visibility to the legislature. It answers Representative Jaskowski's question about members of the legislature and members of the public not knowing what's going on. This is another opportunity to know what's going on, and I really think we need to, I don't know what our procedure on amendments is at this point, but this language clearly ought to be taken out. It does nothing. First of all, did DOT request this? That's my question. No. Did they request to be exempted from the work plan review?
Representative McNamara. To the question.
I actually don't remember.
Well, you know, I think a responsible department like DOT would probably appreciate having a work plan review of people who are more expertise in this issue than they have. So I think this is totally unnecessary, and that we ought to, if we can take it out now, we ought to take it out now. If we have to wait till the floor, we should then wait until the floor. And I think
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, and my I go down 35E through Iowa a couple times a summer, and I'm always distracted from the pollination, the trenches next door, by the all the windmills that are up there creating clean energy. But we'll start another fight here.
You see those fights,
because I think they're pretty.
Yes.
Representative Mr. Chair, if I might ask Representative McNamara one question, and it would be, I'm not entirely sure if off-road vehicles use those ditches, are they allowed to use those ditches? And if so, do you think MnDOT or a work plan would have taken that into account?
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, clearly on the interstate, off-road vehicles are not allowed. Representative Hackmark might need to mention, I believe, on some, I don't know, trunk highways, if potentially sometimes you talk about off-road vehicles, sometimes some people working on the highway have four-wheelers and utility vehicles for doing surveying and such.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Mahoney.
My question is really only to recreational off-road vehicles, and that's it. I'm not trying to poke or prod anybody. I just want to make sure that I'm clear on who gets to use those, and if we're going to invest $2 million and have it ruin the next summer. That's all.
Representative Hackbarth, the question.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mahoney, Representative McNamara did state it correctly. Clearly, interstate highways, there's no ATV trails or anything like that, but on some other county roads and state highways, there are some ATV trails that run through the ditches, and they take that into account, just like you said.
Thank you.
Representative Dunn, you had a follow-up?
Yes, another argument why you want to see the work plan. You want to see if that's being taken account for. You know, I did ask, is this subject to an amendment at this time? Or I don't know what the rules are. Okay.
Yes.
I would like
Representative
to. I guess I would like to move that we delete the that last sentence starting on 112 to point 115, and I guess I think I'd like a roll call vote. I usually don't like to do it in committees, but there are so many issues. Unless the author just agrees to take it out.
Roll call being requested. There will.
The author of the amendment agrees to take it out. We could do it without a roll call.
Representative McNamara.
I would appreciate members' support to leave the language in. I think it'll save money, and it's a good move. Thank
it's
you. I don't support the amendment.
Okay. So we don't.
I'm going to make sure that we're all understanding of the verbal amendment that Representative Kahn is moving. Mr. Sullivan, if you would highlight that for the members.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment, Representative Kahn moves to amend the H2993A14 amendment as follows. Page 1, line 12, delete everything after the period. Page 1, delete lines 13 to 15.
Okay. Members, questions? And Representative Kahn.
Just make one point about what the point of this amendment is. This amendment is to add more public visibility to the process. This is to make sure that we're not interfering with the use of people who use off-road vehicles in parts of it, and it is specifically to give the kind of public attention that we've always wanted given, and then I thought I heard people saying to LCCMR projects, and particularly to talk about pollinators at a time when there's extreme interest in pollinators at this time.
Representative Cornish.
I just don't support the amendment, and I think anybody who would support it supports spending more money where you don't have to and not trusting an agency who's been dealing with road problems and ditches for decades that don't know what they're doing. So I don't support the amendment.
Further comments? Roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Not Black. Albright?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Carlson?
Yes.
David?
No.
Cornish?
No.
Dean?
No.
Raskowski?
No.
Detmer?
No.
Garofalo? Gunther?
No.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hamilton?
No.
Hillstrom? Weinstein?
Yes.
Kahn?
Yes.
Liebling?
Yes.
Moon?
No.
Mahoney?
Yes.
McNamara?
No.
Murphy?
Yes.
Nornes?
No.
Orlowski? Poppy? Torkelson? Erdahl?
No.
And Wagenius?
Yes.
Members, there being 7 ayes and 14 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Amendment to the amendment. My apologies. So, members, we are back to the A14 amendment.
I think Representative Anderson had a question. Oh, it wasn't to the amendment, was it? I'm sorry. I apologize.
Final thoughts, Ms. Representative McNamara.
Please support the amendment.
Members, the amendment A14 moved by McNamara. All in favor of adopting the A14 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No.
Amendment is adopted. Members, where there are 2 remaining amendments before us, the A11 and the A12. Representative Wagenius.
Those are my amendments, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to move A12.
The A12. Wagenius moves the A12 amendment.
thanks, members. The amendment I'm putting in is one that was taken out, or this project that I am wanting to put back in was taken out, and I just want to tell you about it, and the other one that I am going to propose we put back in. Both of them are extremely useful to Minnesota. This one takes satellite data that we have now, and it figures out how climate change will impact very, very local areas. So engineers and others can design very practical adaptations. So specifically, what the U is planning to do is to use its supercomputer and to produce high resolution data for a 3 by 3 mile area. And they would project, make those projections for the entire state. The data would be put on the website in a manner identified by the Minnesota Climate Adaption Partnership, and that's a collaboration of businesses and nonprofits and universities and governments. One of the testifiers for this particular project was Dr. Mark Seeley, and I think you all know who he is. He testified that Minnesota is one of the states that is most impacted by climate change right now. So the information produced by this satellite data made local would be particularly useful here. And I'm just going to give you a couple of examples. One of the things we talk about is more rainfall and more flooding. And so with this data, a road engineer in a local area could say, do I need a culvert this big or do I need a culvert that big? Very practical. Wastewater treatment plants are another place. We put wastewater treatment plants down fairly low now next to a river for the discharge. Perhaps some of them need to be placed higher. For the Department of Agriculture, and all of our departments are interested in this and have supported this, they can use the data for planning for disease outbreaks. It's not just for government, it's for private entities too, particularly our utilities groups. Think about wind and how knowing what your very local weather was going to be like can be helpful to them. Basically, this is just good information for good decision making. The money I'm substituting here is from a proposal that was put in the committee. It did not come from the LCCMR. LCCMR money is constitutionally dedicated. And it specifically says that the assets of the fund shall be appropriated by law for the public purpose of protection, conservation, and preservation and enhancement of natural resources. The project that was put in, and where I am getting the money for the project that was taken out, was to map aggregate. But mapping aggregate does not meet the criteria of the Constitution. The only reason you map aggregate is to sell it. And that's not what this constitutional money can be used for. It's not to say that the state can't map aggregate. It could with general funds. It could with the minerals account. But this, not this money. So with this, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move my amendment and ask for a roll call.
Roll call being requested. Questions, comments from members? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to strongly support the Wagenius Amendment. And Representative Wagenius did an excellent job of summarizing why it's so important. And, you know, particularly the credibility of the lead scientist, Dr. Mark Seeley. But what we heard in the Environment Committee also when this came up is that there was a lot of consultation already happening with local governments, with the very stakeholders that need this information. And so, you know, we look at this from a fiscal standpoint. You know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure in this situation. And so we really have, when you use the example that Representative Wagenius talked about, you know, to anticipate some of these issues of water level rising and wastewater treatment facilities, et cetera. You know, we can save a lot of money knowing in advance how we can respond to this. And so I think this is a really important project. And, again, we have such a credible, strong team of scientists. This was thoroughly vetted in the process. This was included. And so we took an actual, in removing this, and we took an assertive step in actually taking something out that was thoroughly vetted. So that's why I think this is so concerning. We're not coming up with something new that we're just putting into this bill. We're actually restoring a really good project. So I would encourage a yes vote on the Wagenius Amendment.
Representative Hepker.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do oppose the A12 Amendment.
Members, further comments? Roll call being requested. Representative Kahn.
Essentially, the reason for opposing this amendment is specifically because of a disbelief that there's any worry about climate change. Is that essentially the reason? Is that why this reason was proposed, that we don't want to talk about the fact that there might be an issue with climate change?
Mr. Chairman, to that point, it's not appropriate to question motives in the committee or on the floor.
I'm not questioning motives. I'm just questioning reason. Don't you have to get...
Representative Happenpark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Kahn, there were some issues that I was concerned about that we wanted to get back into the bill, and there's some things that had to be taken out. There's so much money to go around. We had to remove some things. We had to put some things back in. That's just the way it works on the LCCMR bill, and we had to make some choices. There's 89 projects. There were originally 89 projects in the bill. There's 86 in the bill now. We took 11 projects out. I think we put 6 back in, something like that. And we had to make some choices. That's simply the way it is.
Follow up, Representative Kahn.
Was that aggregate project originally in the bill?
Representative Hackbarth.
I believe this was one of the this project wasn't originally in the bill.
Representative Arginius.
No, the aggregate project was not originally in the bill.
Okay.
It was not proposed, so it wasn't that it was not heard. It was just never proposed. So it was never proposed, never vetted, never in the bill.
Mr. Chairman, when we went through this bill, we had to take some projects out to use some money to put some other things back in. Some of the projects that went back into the bill were projects that were proposed. So there were some projects that went into the bill that were proposed but didn't make it into the bill, and then there were some projects that we put into the bill that were not proposed, just like Representative Arginius is proposing.
Representative Arginius.
I don't think there were any projects that went back into the bill. I think they were all created someplace else. They were not projects that were low on the list. They were not projects that had been heard and not approved of. These were brand new projects that had no hearing, as I understand it. I'm not in the Environment Committee, but they had no hearing other than, here, we're going to put these on the table and put these in the bill. But we are specifically talking about the aggregate right now, and the aggregate was never considered, never proposed, never considered.
So. Representative Hackbarth? Representative Kahn?
Well, will Representative Hackbarth correct his statement and remove the back from his statement so that we don't have an inaccuracy in the minutes of this meeting?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry if I misspoke and said back in. I did not mean that. But there was a project that did not make it on the, that was proposed, that did not make it on the list that we were going to accept. We did not have a hearing on it, but I put it in the bill. So that's what I meant when I meant to say that, that there was a proposal that we put in that didn't make the list.
Well,
Representative Kahn.
Again, and I'm sorry, I'm not there, so I don't understand it. I didn't go to the meetings, which apparently Representative Hackbarth did. But as I understand it, this was never even in any list of proposals. The aggregate proposal that we're taking the money from was not even in any list of proposals. So there was no way for anyone to have any insight and the public to have any understanding of what that was.
Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and that is correct that it was not one of the original proposals, the aggregate part, but we did have a hearing when we made the amendment in the Environment Finance Committee, and we public did have an opportunity to speak on it at that time.
Representative Arginius.
I'm fine.
Representative Kahn.
Just another question, Matt. Representative Hackbarth, are you a member of LCCMR?
Representative Hackbarth.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, yes, I am.
Well, why don't you think it would have been appropriate to propose this at the LCCMR meetings or to ask for a hearing from LCCMR to cover this project? Don't you think? Many years ago, I'm going back to when I was a member and when I and when I chaired it. I would think for a member to come in later in a committee of something that he'd never given a chance for the commission to discuss and give the kind of thorough vetting that the commission and its staff gives of projects, just see, you know, just a little weird.
Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've made proposals like this in the past on other issues on the LCCMR bill where things have been taken out and put in, and it's not unusual.
Members, any more comment? Roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Knobloch. Albright.
No.
Anderson.
No.
Carlson.
Aye.
Cornish.
No.
Davids.
No.
Dean.
No.
Detmer.
No.
Raskowski.
No.
Garofalo. Gunther.
No.
Hackbarth.
No.
Hamilton.
No.
Hillstrom. Hornstein.
Yes.
Kahn.
Yes.
Liebling.
Yes.
Loon. Mahoney.
Aye.
McNamara.
No.
Murphy.
Yes.
Nornes.
No.
Pulowski.
Yes.
Hoppe. Tarkelson.
No.
Erdahl. Wagenius.
Yes.
Members, there being 8 ayes and 14 nays, the A-12 amendment is not adopted. Representative Arginius, to your A-11.
Yes, I would like to move A-11, and I'll just up front ask for a roll call. This is the other proposal that from the U that I thought was, and I think and I know LCCMR members thought was extremely useful for the state of Minnesota. And this is a proposal from the U's Department of Mechanical Engineering. And it proposes to use, and I'm going to spell it because I cannot say it, Provokeskite, I think it is, but it's Provokeskite, to use this material rather than silica to produce solar cells. It's lighter, it's cheaper, it's more energy producing than silica. And it can be made at very low temperatures. So altogether, a real savings in creating solar cells. The LCCMR money will develop the techniques needed to use this new material. It's not new, but to use this material that hasn't been used for solar cells and to field test the product. And as soon as this happens, Professor Chu then plans to work with state manufacturers and energy providers for implementation and commercialization of this new solar type panel. It is very basic research that the U will be doing here. This is what our U does and what our industries depend on. This particular project is extremely innovative. It's cutting edge. And it's going to use a manufacturing process in the end that is the same roll-to-roll manufacturing process that a lot of our Minnesota businesses like 3M already use. So it is just particularly appropriate for Minnesota. But bottom line, solar, lighter, cheaper, more energy producing. And that's why I am asking that you put this back in. This is obviously something that LCCMR members came to a consensus on. It was actually not a hard consensus because it was the most highly rated project in its category. The money is coming from the aggregate mapping proposal. And with that, I would like to renew my motion.
Members, questions to the amendment? Representative Hepburn.
I oppose the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
I did ask for a roll call, didn't I?
Yep.
You did.
Yep.
Representative Kahn.
As I understand, besides being some really good science, applied science, actually, since it comes from mechanical engineering, this is really something that could have a very highly positive economic impact on the state, too. Representative Wiginius, is that it certainly looks like it when you look at what the attributes are and when you look at what's happening with the increase and interest in the increase of doing solar materials all over. So just this money will go, and as I believe it, we have for any kind of a patent such as this, the money not only goes to the university, but it also goes back to LCCMR, so that we're really cutting out a source of funding for two state entities. So this is, not adopting this amendment is likely to cost us in the future sometime a lot more than the money we're asking to put into it. Is that true, Representative Wiginius?
Representative Wiginius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is correct. This is a project that has patent potential, and because it does, LCCMR has a process working through with the proposer, and if there is a patent and there's money made, part of the money goes to the U, part of the money goes to LCCMR. But on the economic side, besides just going to these two entities, this is such cutting edge work, and it fits so well with some of our biggest companies, including 3M, that to get this going is a huge economic opportunity for Minnesota.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Genius, many things the University of Minnesota develops are often sold, or they have rights to anybody that uses it to manufacture solar panels. Why would this be different? I know I had stock in a heart valve company. The university had proprietary rights to that, and this heart valve company paid and paid and paid, and eventually went broke because of paying. But the university certainly got their money for it. They do that. I remember crackless wild rice. We sold the genetics to California, so they could be the number one wild rice producer in the nation because of that. Why would this be different than those projects?
Representative Wiginius.
Well, the only difference is the tiny portion of money put in by LCCMR. LCCMR would get some money back, but mainly the U gets the money.
Representative Gunther, follow up?
That's enough.
Representative Hamilton.
No, pass.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wiginius, do you think it's a good idea for us to meddle with the university and tell them what they should and shouldn't research?
Representative Wiginius.
Excuse me, but this was a proposal made by the university to LCCMR. The LCCMR did not ask the U to make the proposal. The U made the proposal. A specific professor, Dr. Chu from the U's Department of Mechanical Engineering, submitted a proposal to LCCMR, just like a whole bunch of other people do.
Representative Dean. Members, any further comments to the amendment? Roll call being requested. Clerk will take the roll on the amendment.
Amplock. Albright.
No.
Anderson.
No.
Carlson.
Aye.
Cornish.
No.
Davis.
No.
Dean.
No.
Depper.
No.
Gaskowski.
No.
Garofalo. Gunther.
No.
Hackbarth.
No.
Hamilton.
No.
Hillstrom.
Guys, trouble.
Hornstein.
Yes.
Hahn.
Yes.
Liebling.
Yes.
Loon. Mahoney.
Aye.
McNamara.
No.
Murphy.
Aye.
Nornes.
No.
Pulowski.
No.
Abby. Perkelson.
No.
Birdall.
No.
Wagenius.
Aye.
Members, there being 7 ayes and 15 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Members, I see no more amendments to the bill. There are some members that do wish to speak to the bill. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just looking on page 42 of the bill and lines 12 through 22. And it's talking about what the entities that receive this, what they would be able to do or not do. And I'm just curious, I see on the list we've got money going to like City of Champlin, St. John's University, the Lincoln Pipestone Rural Water System, St. Louis and Lake Counties. Would this section apply to them, and does that mean that in any of the facilities that they build, say for instance they have a restriction on what kind of paper products they use or any other kind of products, and how long does that last? Is that just for the construction of the project, or is that in perpetuity? And if so, how much does that come cost-wise out of the amount that they are receiving?
Ms. Thorne.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, and members, I didn't hear the lines, but I'm assuming what you meant is starting on 42.23. Is that what I heard?
No.
Representative Anderson.
42.12.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Thornton, actually it's both of those sections, but I'm starting actually with subdivision 16. So that's page 42, line 12.
We put that in.
And going through line 22. And those are requirements that says if a political subdivision, like the ones I mentioned, receive this money, they have to follow certain recyclable and repairable and durable materials requirements that the state agencies typically have in place. This also extends to paper stock and printing, and I'm just wondering then if those entities like St. John's University or the Lincoln Pipestone Rural System or the City of Champlin, would they be required to use only certain kinds of paper or certain kinds of products? And then how long does that last? Is that for their entire university system or their entire county system? And then how does that also work then, too, for lines 23 through 36 on over, too?
Ms. Thorne.
Give me a little more details on how what that means.
Mr. Chair and members, Representative Anderson, thank you. Both of those subdivisions apply only to the specific expenditures in the appropriation paragraph in this bill. And both of those have been in place, a version of them, I mean they've been updated with statutory reference and so forth for at least 10 years. And so it is just to that appropriation. We've been asked, that's a question that's been raised in the past and has been responded to. So it would simply, for the City of Champlin, it's just for that appropriation.
And Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Anderson. And
Ms. Thornton, so when you say it's just for that appropriation during the construction of it, or is it beyond that? So say it's a facility that they're building. Is it within that facility that they're using or project that they're using in perpetuity, or is it just for the construction period? Or how long does that last? And then also I noticed in the statute language it says that if it exceeds the 10% mark, then they don't have to abide by that. You know, can you give me ballpark figures of how much, you know, if you're up at 9.9% of a different cost, how much are we adding cost-wise? And has anybody ever looked at that?
Ms. Thornton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, members, it is just to the time period for the expenditures from this appropriation.
And Mr. Chair?
Sure. It's of limited duration. Obviously, if you are, there aren't any buildings being built in this appropriation bill either. So this is rider language that applies broadly on the trust fund. And so it's just, as I said, so if you're doing energy conservation, the goal would be that would be the remainder of the life of the building, because it would be built to that, with that capacity.
And Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, on subdivision 16, that portion, it says that if the cost of the recyclable materials is over 10% of something that would be non-recyclable, can you tell me, by having this requirement in place, how much is the money that we divvy out, how much is that consumed by the kind of a 10% ratio? Is it typically only 5%? Is it 2% more? Or how much are we paying for having that requirement?
Ms. Thorne.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I have not had anyone report to me that this has been an additional cost.
So they've been able to find the materials on par with the cost normal, or have you not received any report whatsoever?
Ms. Thorne.
One way or the other.
Chair, Representative Anderson, I have not had contact, to my recollection, of this increasing the cost for the work done under a specific paragraph.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Riddle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't know who can answer this. I have a couple of quick questions here. It seems that in going through this that most of the money has been allocated to the University of Minnesota or the DNR.
Very spicy.
Is there a tabulation somewhere about how much each got?
Ms. Thorne.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, I have a tabulation from the original LCCMR recommendations. I have not, since the hearing notice on Friday, I've not gone back and retabulated with the House changes. As Representative Hackbarth said, we originally had 89 appropriations. There are now 86 appropriations in here. I believe for the there was some taken out from the University of Minnesota. An NGO and some taken removed from the DNR and one Washington County, and then the new additions, there were three to DNR, one to Bowser, one to MnDOT.
Ms. Thornton, if you could just
provide that.
Update that list and then provide it to the committee, then we can disseminate to the members.
And then,
Representative Riddle.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Then, from the this OLA summary that we have, the University of Minnesota is in conflict with the statute governing the investment of trust fund money, according to this, and specifically the statutory requirement that all money earned by the trust fund must be credited to the trust fund. But as of the end of February 2015, the university held about $17.7 million of unspent trust fund money in its investment accounts. The question, therefore, is this situation being addressed?
Ms. Thorne.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, members. Yes, Representative Hackbarth's amendment first thing this morning resolves that. There was inconsistency in the statute, the trust fund statute for long-term investment, and the University of Minnesota statute, which states that appropriations within the fiscal year appropriated shall be dispersed to the University of Minnesota, what they call 112, 112, 112. So 112 each year. Our annual appropriations were going out all in that first year. And so this resolves that inconsistency that the Office of the Legislative Auditor came upon.
So. Thank you, Representative Hackbarth, for addressing that.
Representative Kahn.
My interest was perked by saying that one of the projects taken out was to Washington County. Was that
Representative Hackbarth or Ms. Thorne?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn and members, yes, there was a, it was called the Wilder Forest Acquisition. There was $500,000 for Washington County working in cooperation with the Minnesota Food Association for land acquisition.
And so that's no longer in the bill. It was removed.
Mr. Chair, members, that's no longer in the bill in front of you, correct?
Okay. Did you consult with Representative Dean before you did that so that he would have an opinion on it for as the representative from Washington County? Was that?
Do the Drazkowski bill.
I don't know. You know, I just thought he might have some interest in it since it was in his local county. I guess if no one felt that they needed to tell him and he didn't feel that he needed to ask, I guess that's just the way it is. No.
Representative Hackbarth, I'll give you the final word.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. We spent a lot of time on the pollinator issue. This is also, pollinator issue is very, very important to agriculture. Goes much beyond what we were discussing here today, so it's an important part of the bill, and I do support that, and thank you for your indulgence here today. Thank you.
With that, members, I will renew Representative Hackbarth's motion to move House File 2993 as amended and refer it to the General Register. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Motion is approved.
Thank you, members.
Members, a little bit of housekeeping before we adjourn. Our next meeting is going to be on Thursday, April 7th, following the floor session. With that, Mr. Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, do you have any idea what the agenda will be on Thursday? It's my understanding that sometime soon there's going to be the House budget resolution. Will that be Thursday?
I would say stay tuned for those remarks, Representative Carlson. I'm sure that Representative Knobloch has something in store for you.
It looked to me like Mr. Stone was almost called your representative there. Was about ready to comment, but if you want us to wait. But Knobloch told me that sometime this week we would be dealing with the budget resolution, so I'm guessing it's Thursday.
I'll leave that for the chair to visit with you about. With that, members, we are adjourned.